All right, welcome everybody to Second Court of Appeals. We have two cases on our 10:30 docket. We will proceed directly through both of them. The first case is State of Texas versus Connie Torres, and I believe both counsel have now checked in. So first we have Ms. Dahoney for the state, if you're ready to argue.
Morning. May it please the court. I'm here on another state appeal. This is another DWI. This one is out of Judge Cook's court, and the hearing took place this last year. And it's just a reasonable suspicion case involving a headlight that was out. I think it was not this panel, but I had a headlight case not too long ago, Francis, that with a little different posture. But so we're here again on headlights. It's a simple case involving reasonable suspicion and just applying the standards that we have in a motion to suppress situation. The officer testified that he saw the car approaching from the right, and he saw the right headlight on the car out. And when it's a very brief record, the officer was at a stop sign. The car that Ms. Torres drove went past him, and there is a video from the officer's patrol car that faces solely forward. The officer said that when he turned his head to the right, looked 100 yards down the way, he saw the right headlight out. The trial court later at the end of the hearing said he found the officer, I think the judge said something like, I believe he was credible without a doubt, or without a doubt credible, something like that, a glowing credibility assessment. So we have an officer who stopped someone because he credibly saw a light out. Now, what happened after the officer saw that is what causes us to be here. The video again only shows facing forward, and then the police officer pulled his patrol car after Mrs. Torres's car and followed the car. So the video also shows the officer in his patrol car behind Ms. Torres's car. So there's not video of the time when the officer looked to the right side where he said he saw the light out. When the officer's stopping Ms. Torres, and of course it blossoms into a DWI stop. When he's talking to her, she says, why'd you stop me, officer? And he says, you had a light out. So he proceeds to show her, and another assist arrives, and you can see this on the video, and they are going to the front of the car. They don't see a headlight out. The state agrees. At the stop, after the car was already stopped, the headlight is on. The officer and they get back and forth, and they're switching lights on and off, trying to figure out if there's something wrong with one of the lights, because it appears that's what the officer saw and believed, and he was credible. And so after the fact, the functionality of the light is in place. So the trial court makes the finding on credibility, but then says, but I'm granting the motion because I just think the officer was mistaken. Well, that's very kind of him, but that's not the legal standard. And the state argued this was reasonable suspicion. And there could be, we don't have to answer the question for why the light was on. And there's really kind of two ways to filter the facts here. One is just straight reasonable suspicion, and the one is that there was a mistake being made. Either way, it's still a good stop. Okay, the straightforward, it's reasonable suspicion, is just syllogistic logic. Officer sees headlight out, says that's the reason for a stop, transportation code violation, reasonable suspicion, voila, to a certain extent, excuse my French, that there's reasonable suspicion. The officer's credibility is not in doubt because of the finding, the express finding by the trial court. Then if you look at it the other way, let's say the officer somehow made a mistake and as the judge said, credibly saw the car and somehow mistakenly didn't see the light. Because the officer's credibility is not in question, that's reasonable too. And I dropped a final little note, if you need to get past the original straightforward reasonable suspicion assessment, to talk about Hine, which was really a mistake of law case that was at the United States Supreme Court, but it brings up something that's been discussed many times in Texas courts, is that an officer can make a reasonable mistake of law, of fact as well, and still make a good stop. The way I often explained what I used to call mistake of law and mistake of fact stops, and I'll be very frank, I thought Hine surprised me. I was very shocked by that holding because I like to have people be accurate on the law, not even be mistaken on the law when you're dealing with law enforcement. But it shows that a mistake of fact is also good, and of course we have those cases as well. The simple way I used to explain a mistake of fact stop, we live in downtown, or we have downtown Fort Worth, and we have lots of streets going left and right. And let's say that an officer sees somebody in a white Volvo commit a traffic violation. We don't have to name it, some traffic violation, no doubt about it. And the officer's going on a street here, and the white Volvo goes around, so the officer misses seeing that white Volvo as it goes around the block because we have one-way streets. So the officer quickly makes it around, sees the white Volvo, makes a stop. Let's just assume that at that point, whoever's driving the Volvo has beyond a reasonable doubt proof that it wasn't me, it was that other white Volvo. That's still a good stop. That's a reasonable, close in time, proximity, etc., reasonable mistake of fact if it was the wrong car. Here, I don't think we have a mistake. I can't answer why the light wasn't on later. I don't have to. That's not what reasonable suspicion requires. The linchpin, I think I've said a million times here, on the Fourth Amendment is reasonableness. We have a valid transportation code violation. We have an officer who's credible. That equals reasonable suspicion. I want to point out that one final thing is that something I've always called proof in the pudding evidence does not go to reasonable suspicion. To use a case besides just my silly label of proof in the pudding, that would be the State versus Duran case that I've cited, and Judge Cochran's opinion in that case, I think, is, well, her opinions are always didactic and interesting, but you can't, when you look at reasonable suspicion facts, you always look at the time the decision's made. You don't look at facts after. A easy way to make that sensical is when the state goes in and wants to seize evidence, and then say we find a huge cache of contraband of some sort, that doesn't automatically say, ooh, that's a good search. That would be wrong. That would be proof in the pudding out, just because we found contraband where we thought it was. And by the same token, if we don't find contraband somewhere with, say, a search warrant, that doesn't mean it was a bad search. The bottom line is you don't use what's after the fact, what's learned after the fact, to change your assessment of the validity of the Fourth Amendment action. So here, looking at the video, for what you can see on the video straight ahead from the patrol car or afterward is after the fact. So the trial court in this case said he watched the video and he said, oh, I think I see when the patrol car pulls behind the car, Ms. Couture's car, I see that the lights are kind of even. So I think the lights are both on. Well, we know when the stop happened, the lights were both on. This state didn't contest that when Ms. Torres was on the side of the road, the headlights worked. What we hang on is the fact that the officer saw one headlight out. That's all he needed. So it's that after the fact sort of proof in the pudding sort of stuff that doesn't go into the calculation. In Duran, it came out a little differently in that case and involved an officer looking at a video and seeing things that he hadn't seen when he made the stop. He was preparing for a motion to suppress, and he sees the video, and he sees another traffic violation that occurred. So he can't jump on and add that on because it did happen, because it wasn't part of his decision-making process. Again, temporally, reasonable suspicion is just from the facts at the time of the decision-making for the stop. So here, this is an absolutely legitimate stop.
And it looks like perhaps the only distinction between you and the appellee is as to the timing on the video of actually watching the vehicle. And you believe the facts show, or the video shows, that it didn't happen until a few seconds after he pulled behind and after he had made the decision to stop. Is that correct?
He The officer testifies he sees the car 100 yards down, and he explains that he had to turn to the right to see it. And he also explains that the video, the in-car video, looked straight ahead and so didn't see what he saw. So that distinction is actually really well placed in the record. It's not really arbitrary. It's a short record, but that's discussed. So, yes, that's the distinction. The officer saw a headlight out when he looked to the right.
Go ahead.
So you say your position is that if he thinks he sees a missing light, but yet he's wrong, nevertheless, the light wasn't missing. Let's just say that was the finding by the trial court. That's still reasonable suspicion if he thinks it. But he was wrong.
Not if he thinks it, if he's reasonable. And that's what Hine and that's what the case law says on...
No, listen to my question. The officer believes he saw the light out. But the finder of fact, the trial court, says, no, you were wrong. The light wasn't out. You were wrong. You were mistaken. You thought you saw the light out, but you were wrong. You're saying that that's still reasonable suspicion.
Yes, because it's gauged by the officer's, the facts known to the officer at the time.
But if the officer says, I saw the light missing, and the fact finder says, you're lying, I find that you're not credible, then that's not reasonable suspicion.
Absolutely.
So it goes to the officer's subjective belief in this scenario. That's the difference between those two scenarios, is the officer believes he saw it, the fact finder says, you may believe all day long that you saw it. I don't find that you saw it.
I think an officer can still have, I think an officer can be incorrect, and the trial court can still find them lacking credibility for other sorts of factors. There might be getting in the weeds, opportunity or capacity to observe. Maybe the officer had just had eye surgery and couldn't see. Something of that nature. Nothing in the record that goes to any of that.
No, but nevertheless, we do defer to the fact finder.
That's correct. Right. Now, in this situation, though, the credibility finding is an express finding. The trial court's actual finding is not that the office, I don't think you can read it, that he's, well, you're...
Isn't it possible that the trial court, by saying that he was credible, was saying, I have no reason to think you're lying, but I think you were mistaken?
I didn't cite State versus Shepherd. I think it's a 2008, and I'm sorry, Barry, I think it's a 2008 case from the Court of Criminal Appeals, and again, it's one of Judge Cochran's, as I recall. It's a case where the Court of Appeals in another state appeal went behind the credibility assessment of the trial court to imply or infer other facts that weren't actually articulated. And I'm not saying that you're doing that, Your Honor. What I'm saying is I think the credibility finding is huge. In a post-Cullen world, Cullen was the case in 2003 out of Bexar County, where we finally got findings of fact and conclusions of law kind of on the heels of State v. Ross, so that we weren't having to make up or figure out or discern what was going on in the trial court's mind when they were making a ruling. Because for years, we were having problems on appeals from the state standpoint prevailing because we didn't know.
Right, I'm not really trying to go behind what the trial court found. I'm just saying, is it logically consistent for the court to find that he's credible but yet mistaken? Are you saying that's illogical?
No, I don't think it's illogical.
They too could be true. They could coexist.
Correct. I think the credibility finding is what carries the way based on State versus Shepherd. I also think it's reasonable to see that the trial court made a mistake. I know I'm approaching that light turning, that the trial court made a mistake in his assessment because he actually talks about looking at the light when it's in front of the vehicle and later. And it is possible also for lights to go on and off. That's within the world. Not nonsensical. So he's looking at the wrong, he's applying the law improperly to the facts by looking at the wrong temporal aspect for reasonable suspicion. The trial court did not say, I think you were mistaken when you saw 100 yards away the light was off. He doesn't say that. He says, I see that it's on, or I think it's on, but I'm not 100% sure when it's in front of you and to the left. So we're talking, I know we're splitting hairs, But I think that's the way it has to fall. And I'm sorry that I didn't cite State versus Shepherd earlier, but that truly shows you can't go behind that finding. That's how I read that. I know you have that cite too, Your Honor, so.
Yeah, we're fine with that.
Yeah.
All right, thank you, Ms. Dehoney. Mr. Alford.
May it please the court, my name is Barry Alford. I'm the attorney for the appellee. I was also the attorney at the trial court level. I represented Ms. Torres at the motion to suppress hearing, so I am very familiar with this motion to suppress. Before I get into some of the issues that the attorney for the state mentioned, I do want to clarify, and I believe this honorable court has already addressed this issue, but to make sure as far as the standard of review, I believe that we do need to give deference to the trial court, especially in cases where the determination is based on assessments of a witness's credibility. And that's, I think that's something that the counsel for the state has expressed multiple times, both in argument and in their brief. So I just want to make sure that, and I believe that's something that this honorable court has already addressed, so I'm not going to belabor that point. I do want to talk about some of the issues regarding this stop. And the first thing I want to talk about, and the thing I will take issue with counsel for the state, is this is one word that the counsel has brought up several times, and that word is credible. And I believe that their argument is erroneous in the fact that the trial court judge said specifically that he found the officer to be credible, not his testimony. And again, this is something that this honorable court brought up earlier. And I just want to quote, this is from the record. This is when the court is about to make their ruling after arguments. The court said, after reviewing the evidence, after hearing the testimony of the officer in this case, I don't have any doubt as to the credibility of the officer. But my issue is when I look at the videotape and I look to see if the glow from the headlights appear to be even on each side. It's not 100%, but they appear to be even, as though when he got behind the car, both lights were operating. That's what it appears to me, as if I'm looking at it from behind. And for that reason, I have to conclude that a mistake was made. Okay, so as this honorable court said, these two things can coexist. A person can be credible and be mistaken. I have no doubt that the three justices on this panel are credible. But just look back and see, is it not true that everyone can say at some point, for whatever reason, I saw something and I was mistaken? Doesn't mean you're not credible. So that's where I find that counsel's argument is erroneous. A person,
so if we take both those things to be true, that he was credible, and the trial court's finding that he made a mistake, how do we get around the United States Supreme Court's position that a mistake of fact, which, okay, the trial court found a mistake of fact. A mistake of fact doesn't in and of itself make a stop unreasonable or violative of the Fourth Amendment.
Okay, well, let me address that issue. I was going to get to it later, but let me go ahead and get to it now. The officer, when he first sees Ms. Torres' vehicle, says he saw a light out. Okay, but the state also wants to argue, and here's another thing I think is erroneous. They said that everything after that is after the fact. It's what they call it. It's not after the fact. The officer has to look at the totality of the circumstances prior to making a stop of Ms. Torres' vehicle, look at the totality of the circumstances in determining whether he believes that reasonable suspicion exists. It's not just, well, he says, well, I saw this down the road, and that's it. Because then that, again, that's something else that the state put in their brief. They believe that because the officer is found to be credible, that his testimony is dispositive, and that's just not true. Because the officer, once he got behind the vehicle, and it's on State's Exhibit Number 2 that was played at the motion to suppress hearing, The trial court judge said, I looked at the vehicle and I saw a light illuminating from both sides
and
of the vehicle.
And he got behind it,
right,
which is different than 100 yards down the road. But that still doesn't get to, because Chief Justice Roberts, in his opinion, says and gives the example of a police officer seeing someone in an HOV lane, only seeing one person in the car, stops the car because he only saw one person, only to find two children sleeping in the back seat, and therefore not visible. Clearly, he made a mistake. What he saw, though, was not improper, was not an improper stop under the circumstances because he made a mistake. What did the trial judge find? He found a mistake.
Right.
He didn't find a lie or something that was not credible. He found a mistake. So how do we get around that opinion?
Again, Your Honor, it goes to the totality of the circumstances. All of the facts that this officer observed prior to actually pulling Ms. Torres over and saying, I'm stopping you for this reason, has to go into his decision on whether he believes reasonable suspicion exists. And so it's not just say I saw her car down the road. It's also I got behind her car, as it stated in the state's exhibit 2, and he had to have seen the exact same thing that the trial court judge said.
But
in that
let's say he did see, wouldn't that still be a reason to stop the car? Because clearly, the if you take both things to be true, it wasn't working 100 yards that way. It was working once you got in behind him. Wouldn't there still be a reason to stop him? Because obviously there's an improperly functioning headlamp.
All right, then let me take that a step further. And I want to read again from the transcript from the record. And this is the direct examination of the attorney for the state. And this is her examination of the officer. Question, and what did you do after the vehicle proceeded through the intersection? Answer, I pulled it in behind the vehicle. Question, at that point, did you make a decision to pull that vehicle over for the headlight violation you observed? Answer, yes. Question, did the vehicle pull over appropriately? Answer, yes. Question, at that point, did you begin an investigation? Answer, for the headlight violation, yes. So again, this everything, Your Honor, has to be taken into consideration. If this officer, even after he stops the vehicle, if he stops the vehicle and then the evidence suggests that he is mistaken before, that I believe at that point that there's no reason to detain Ms. Torres. When you look at
what is the evidence that he came to the conclusion that he was mistaken before, or reasonably should have come to the conclusion that he was mistaken before when he actually made the stop?
I'm not sure I follow your question.
No, it's not a good question.
No, it's
is there any evidence that would lead us to believe that the police officer actually concluded before he made the stop that he was mistaken when he thought he saw the headlight out down 100 feet?
The officer himself did not say that, no, but I think the testimony and the evidence would lead a reasonable person to believe that what he saw before, he was, again, as the trial court judge said, mistaken. And whether it's a reasonable mistake or not, again, once, if you look at the totality of the circumstances, Your Honor, I think you have to conclude that based on the fact that he got behind the vehicle and you could see the light emanating from both headlights, the fact that even after he pulled Ms. Torres over, he conducted this investigation, if you've concluded that he was wrong before, that's when you have a Fourth Amendment violation. That's where the Fourth Amendment violation comes into play. Because once the officer says, okay, I thought I saw something before, he's a credible officer, nobody's questioning that, but he made a mistake, Ms. Torres still, I believe, is being detained illegally, because when you look at the totality of the circumstances, Your Honor, I believe that when you look at all of it, you have to conclude that he did not have that reasonable suspicion did not exist, and for that reason, that's why I believe that the Fourth Amendment violation kicked in, and that's what the trial court judge concluded. He's a credible person. There is no testimony or evidence that he's ever been suspended or convicted of perjury or anything like that. He's a credible person, but credible people make mistakes. It happens. And for that reason, I believe that when you look at the totality of the circumstances, this officer does not get to take advantage of the fact that a mistake was made. Once he realizes or reasonably should have realized that reasonable suspicion did not exist, at that point he has to, Ms. Torres needs to be free to leave. And she wasn't free to leave. That's where we get this Fourth Amendment violation that we talk about. And that's why I believe that the state is erroneous on two counts. Number one, credibility. You can be credible and still be mistaken. That's number one. And number two, the evidence that they talk about being after the fact is not, in fact, after the fact. Because all the facts and circumstances that this officer learned about from the time that he first saw Ms. Torres' vehicle coming from his right until the time he stops her and conducts this investigation that he talks about, all of that has to be taken into consideration. And if that time we haven't established that reasonable suspicion exists, she needs to be free to leave, or we have a Fourth Amendment violation. And that's for that reason, I believe that the trial court was correct in finding that no reasonable suspicion exists, and we are asking that this court affirm that finding. I know I have time left. I'm going to yield the remainder of my time unless this court has any more questions for me. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Alford.
I will merely defer to the language in Terry that actually talks about how the focus for reasonable suspicion is at the time the decision is made, and how that, of course, is drawn back in Judge Cochran's opinion in State versus Duran. And based on the facts of that case, it very explicitly shows how important it is to consider what the officer knew at the time they decided to make the stop. I appreciate the HOV example. I don't know why I don't remember that example, Justice Gabriel. I think that is an excellent example that Justice Roberts wrote in Hine, and kicking myself as I realized I was using my silly Volvo example I've used for years. I need to adopt the better example.
But isn't this example more like this? The officer thinks that he sees someone in an HOV lane, and it's just one person, but when he pulls them over, discovers that big as day, there's a second person sitting right there. There aren't children hidden in the back, but there's big as day, a person sitting right there, and he was just wrong. He was just mistaken in what he thought. Isn't that really more close to the facts that we have in this case?
It could be. We don't know, because we didn't have crash dynamics figure out if the car light was not working or working, or if there was a tree that precluded seeing, or, again, the one-eyed officer or any of that. We have a credible officer who saw a headlight out and made a stop. That's pretty much the bread and butter of law enforcement and reasonable suspicion, and it's a valid stop, and whether and on its own based on the testimony or if it was a mistake under Hine, it's a valid stop. We'd ask that this case be sent back so that we can prosecute the DWI, and I appreciate the time.
Thank you, Ms. Dehoney. Mr. Alford, thank you. We appreciate both counsel's arguments today and, of course, all your briefing and preparation for submission. Your case is now submitted, and you all are excused. We will call our next case, Hernandez v. State. You are welcome. 2-15-284-CR.